Hey there, it's Mathieu.
And this is Federico.
Welcome to The Dart Bullseye,
a podcast on innovators, entrepreneurs, and investors,
aka people familiar with the matter. In fact, we love to chat with brilliant people coming from all walks of life.
Like you who want public with no revenues.
You who launch free stocks in 3 months.
You who want to challenge Amazon e-commerce.
You who dream to send your car to space.
You who invested in oil during the green bubble.
You pivoting your startup.
Today with me there is Matthias Puls, Managing Director of Kenku, a healthcare startup based in Berlin. Before becoming Managing Director of Kenku, Matthias was a management consultant for 10 years. He is author of several articles and papers regarding digital health and editor of the book Digital Business Models in Healthcare. Matthias and I first met in October 2020. In the context of the Health Plus Accelerator in Munich. We actually got to know each other while talking about possible personas that Kenku could approach. And we were talking about product knowledge, which is basically the role I'm working for. Matthias, was it any useful, the conversation that we had?
Of course, definitely. Because especially after pivoting last summer, it was very important for us to understand who we should now approach with our new product. So background is that we were running a B2B2C product in the healthcare space, and we're now pivoting to B2B. So I have a complete new buyer of your product. And for us, it was very important to understand who this potential buyer is, how we can approach them, how we can amend our communication to, at the end of the day, make the sales we need.
Generally talking about personas and figuring out exactly who is the best person to approach in a company and who's feeling the pain that you are solving with your product as a startup is extremely important. These are like ongoing conversation from the start. I think that before kind of talking about pivoting and personas, it would be very nice to hear your story and how you got to the startup world.
Yes, of course. It was quite a long way, I would say. So I have a business degree. I started in management consulting, did this for approximately 10 years. Started with KPMG and corporate finance, then later for Deloitte Consulting, the last almost 6.5 years for a boutique consultancy called Boehringer Partners based in London. But we grew the office in Düsseldorf, so in the west of Germany, completely different area. So we did mostly commodity energy trading projects there for large multinationals, typical consultant life, living out of the suitcase from Monday to Thursday. Early 2018, I decided that I want to do something else, something new, a bit getting out of my comfort zone again. And I thought I have to make the move to Berlin from Düsseldorf. So complete new setting. And I had a job offering there. But then a friend of a friend called me and said, well, it's great that you are coming to Berlin, but you will not sign with the energy company there because you will join us here at Kenku. You will be part of our management team. And it took then, I think, just two rather quick conversations and meeting face to face until I really did that. So I signed, I moved over in summer 2018 to Berlin. And then I was part of the management team of Kenku. And at Kenku, these days we were developing a B2B2C app with a focus on stress and burnout prevention. And the big differentiator was that we were actually able to measure stress level, and we're doing this only through the smartphone camera. So no wearables needed. We are able to analyze the pulse wave in the finger. We are then analyzing the so-called heart rate variability, which is a biomarker, scientific biomarker for stress and body load. And through this cardiovascular vital data, we are then able to give the users an idea where they stand, how much their body's under pressure. And what they can do afterwards is then getting breathing exercises, meditations. So to really give them a low threshold tool or digital companion in their pocket. Then last year in summer, we were thinking what we want to do now, because we really felt that sales cycles were very, very long. And it was not so easy to sell a B2B2C product in a German market. which is currently just about to really evolve. And we then decided to pivot, to go from the B2B2C model to a B2B approach. We are now really focusing on our health tech and what we are really able to do best. We now have the mission to create accessible and effective solutions for vital data in mobile health management. And therefore, we developed an SDK. So we're giving out, through a software development kit, the ability to measure and analyze cardiovascular vital data in real time, which is very relevant for all health, fitness, and wellness apps, because they need more vital data to make their products better. And this is what we are delivering here. It's a medical class one device certified. And we really see the huge demand in the market. And we're currently having much, much fun developing this further.
Okay, that was a lot of knowledge in a very short amount of time. You said that you moved from the energy sector in the role of a consultant, changing project and client pretty often. And now you're in the medical technology sector. And you know a lot about medtech and health tech. Did you find it hard to perform this context switch and to gain all this domain knowledge?
Well, I think when you're starting in a completely new industry, there's so much you can learn and you definitely have to learn. But I think it also depends a bit on your mindset. I was super curious. I was really a bit bored about the energy sector. So therefore, I think my brain really wanted to get new food, especially in a sector where I think 10 years ago, I didn't really wanted to work because I found it back in these days quite boring because there was nothing really going on. Whereas now there's so much going on and there's so many new things coming up. Like almost every day you hear something new about the new startup. And for me, it was quite easy to catch up there. I had many, many good conversations. I think Berlin is one of the top healthcare bubbles across Europe and therefore also quite a small world still. And many founders are very, very open to catch up with them, to get in touch. And also had an idea to edit a book in April 2020 there. So we brought together 40 healthcare founders in the German-speaking market, added 30 experts there. And I think at the moment, it's still kind of a benchmark for the German-speaking digital healthcare startup space. And this also made it much, much easier to get in touch with people, to learn a lot from these people. And yeah, I think over time, especially also when you're interacting in digital health every day, there's so much you learn. And this is at the end of the day, you just catch up. I think you can't do anything else but just learning every day.
I agree with you when you are saying that Berlin is definitely one of the main hub of the health tech sector in Europe and beyond. I also get a lot of passion and energy from talking with founders, exchanging ideas, learning new things continuously. Given the fact that you have experience beyond the startup world and you have tried different sectors, do you think that also in other working environments, other than startups, you have the opportunity to learn so much in so little time?
Oh, that's a very good question. My impression at the moment is not, because I think it's the startups that are currently disrupting so many industry, everything is so quickly progressing at the moment. So I think startup at the moment is the place to be part of change, part of transformation of various industry. And among these, of course, healthcare, which was a bit like in the Stone Age until yesterday. I think if you have the opportunity and are keen to learn quickly and want to get things done with very flat hierarchies, I think the startup life is something you should definitely consider. Whereas I also would say that my consulting life was a very good time, but you're still working like mostly for large multinationals, which are of course a bit less innovative, much, much slower, very hierarchical. And also, as you might know, life as a consultant is not always every day the easiest.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It's definitely hectic and it obviously depends a lot from the client and the project you are supporting and working at. But I think that also life as a startup managing director, startup founder, startup employee can be extremely fast-paced from time to time. You were talking before about working together with big corporates on projects and as well the main characteristics of big corporates with respect to working in a startup. Big corporates and to a certain extent also consulting firm are extremely organized with processes and so on. Do you think that you benefit from gaining experience in structured organizations now that you're working in a startup? Did you have the impression that this helped you organize the chaos?
Yes, definitely. I think massively. Especially when you have like a pure business background, you think that you're lacking more some technical experience there. But coming out of consulting, where you think this is just a basic skill everybody has, is that no, it is at the end of the day when you have lots of experience, it's a real core skill, and I think it's very important to be able to manage the chaos at the end of the day. Which does not mean that when you have 5 employees that you are. That you directly need a big quality management, that you have to do process management and set up process over and over again, make big process landscapes. I think that's not the case, but I think it really gives you skills to hardly lose sight of the big picture, to be able to also steer employees that don't have the experience yet. So from my perspective, the skill set, all the tools I got through consulting are worth a lot now also in the startup space.
That's definitely good to know for me and for all the others who are considering a change in their career path from consulting to startup.
Oh, definitely, definitely. I think the challenge for people working in consulting is to really find the right time to also leave. Because, of course, you get used to the security in consulting. You have rather good salaries early onwards. And then I think you're always in this kind of, trying to get to the next level, to be promoted, et cetera, et cetera. And then I think people become a bit lazy in their minds to say, okay, maybe this is actually quite comfortable here. And why should I then, go into the startup world again, out of my comfort zone, and start a bit from scratch again. So I think that's definitely can be one challenge, leaving consulting.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, I think it's a challenge for everyone, leaving the comfort zone. But on the other hand, whenever you leave this comfort zone, it's precisely then when you learn the most. That's at least my impression. You are pushed by fear or by willingness to succeed, and somehow you manage to overcome the obstacles ahead of you and somehow make it in a way or another.
Fully agree. Yeah. And I mean, I'm totally convinced that especially regarding motivation, the thing that keeps people motivated is learning. It's the ability to learn. It's the chance to learn, to grow one's own mindset, knowledge, to gain more experience. At the end of the day, ideally, you have a growth mindset and want to learn so much more about things out there and how you can make a difference there. And so it's not just standing still. And this is what definitely keeps me motivated and also kept me motivated to leave one industry and go into another industry and be open there and learn and to grow. And grow both professionally, but especially personally, right? So it's a skill set you will then need in other situations again.
It's a sudden change of topic, so please bear with me. You mentioned before quality, which is a strong element in health tech and med tech startups. From my experience, quality is extremely important and somehow also extremely hard for a startup to cope with, because it requires a lot of paperwork on one side, and also obtaining certifications and so on is not as fast as you may think. Maybe this was just my impression, but I was wondering whether you could share your experience at Kenku regarding quality in the medical technology sector.
Yeah, I think quality in healthcare is a huge must, because at the end of the day, we are speaking about health and people's lives at the end of the day, right? So therefore, it is a given and is very important, and therefore regulation must be very strict in general. And then I think we need to zoom in a bit and must understand how strict we need to be in which area. I would say at the moment, there's lots of digital technology out there, which is mostly in the prevention space. So from primary to secondary to tertiary prevention, where the risk of your solution towards the health of the user or patient, however you want to call them, is not massive. So we are speaking about European Medical Device Certification Class 1 or 2A. In Germany, for example, for the new reimbursement scheme under the Digital Health Act, you must have a certified app under 1 or class 2A. And this is the big gap here already. Because if you're more moving towards diagnosis, that means 2A, and this directly incorporates that you must set up a large quality management system. And this is where, of course, lean organization of a startup, the pain begins, because you are so busy, you have so many things in mind, and you really want to make progress. And documentation, at least on the short run, slows you, of course, down. On the other hand, the documentation is very important to keep the quality high, also to deliver to your own like very, very high standards. To have documentation there you can refer to. So it also helps, of course, the internal organization. However, when you're considering a startup that is like growing from the inside, and in the beginning, nobody's thinking about any process documentation or other documentation, especially in the development world, where all developers, they want to write code and they don't want to fill out any forms there. So everybody must understand that without regulation, it is not possible. And you as a manager need to understand how much of this regulation you already need and how much of the regulation can still wait. This is my point of view. We are medical class 1 certified, but this year we'll be moving more to 2A, which is a new challenge for everybody. But when you think about also the buyer side, which is can be insurance companies, it can also be pharmaceutical companies, this is what they expect from you, also from startups. They don't differentiate. And I think that's good that they don't differentiate, because at the end of the day, quality must come first, because we are dealing with helping people's lives.
Which is definitely a huge responsibility for whoever is developing the product. You just mentioned that moving from class 1 to class 2A, so moving from prevention to diagnosis. In the development of Kenku's products, did you have a neat line, a neat separation between the product which was first for prevention purposes and which now became a diagnostics product?
Well, I think I need to start a bit earlier there, because we're having our B2B2C product out there. It's called Kenku Stress Guide. This is exactly, it's a primary prevention tool. It's a class 1 certified digital app. And that's totally fine from this perspective. You don't need a 2A there, because it's a prevention space. It, at the end of the day, it is supposed to keep healthy people healthy. So the risk there of the device towards the patient or the user is not big. Whereas we are now moving from the B2B to C space to the B2B space. So we are offering technology for other applications to be implemented. So other applications can integrate our technology so that their own patients can measure cardiovascular vital data in real time. And then the question is also from a regulatory perspective, what do you do with these measures? Do you say these are the numbers, full stop? Or do you say these are the numbers, and based on these numbers, we are diagnosing this one certain cardiovascular disease? And then, of course, you're moving more into A space, because it has a different impact. And you must be qualified to be able to make these data diagnoses and use this data also wisely. And I think this is exactly the line, how you move there.
Thank you for this clarification. After your explanation, it became crystal clear, the difference between the two. So pivoting is definitely something that happens in most startups. And I think it's interesting for two reasons. It kind of happens after a strong decision towards approaching a different market, and also it has huge effects on the organization and on the people working in the startup. What did you pivot in the first place?
I think first of all, I would say pivoting is a very, very bold decision to make, because at the end of the day, you're shifting your strategy very often, I think, to at least 90%, sometimes to 180%. And this means sometimes you need a new skill set from employees. You have completely different customers. You're building a different product, and you still need new cash. Normally, you, of course, pivot because you feel that with your existing business model, you cannot be as successful as you want to be, or like the market has changed, etc. So for us, it was very interesting because, as I mentioned, we had this B2B2C product out there. We had the first also large contracts signed with statutory and private health insurance companies in Germany. But we got the impression that the sales cycles are so long, which don't really help you as a startup. And at the end of the day, there's many, many applications in the mental health space, but the buyer side couldn't really understand the difference there. Other startups that approached us and said, look, you have this measurement. Is there any chance that we can also build this into our application? And first we said, of course not, because this is kind of our USP, but this really kicked off our thinking process. And we thought about where we can really focus and what we can do best. And this is for sure the health tech part, the cardiovascular part. And we thought, okay, this would make total sense that we become the ones who help other startups in the digital health space to become better and to lift them on a new level. And I'm convinced that as there's many, many content apps at the moment out there, that the market will start consolidating within the next 1.5 years, meaning that in order to be able to survive in this market, you must be able to offer a more effective solution, a more tailored, a more individualized product offering for your patients. But for this product offering, you must understand the user, because otherwise you cannot individualize. Therefore, you need data. You need relevant, vital data from your users to really understand who is currently using my application. What does the person need? What is there? What the person, for example, does not need? All digital health applications are built in the same way. They are consisting of three main layers, which is first an anamnesis layer. We just ask a few questions like onboarding, etc. The second one is a data layer, data interpretation layer. And the third one is the intervention layer, which is then, of course, the programs you want to normally play out. But the middle layer at the moment, from my market knowledge, is almost not very well developed among most of these digital health applications there. But the market must and will move into this direction. You see that payers requesting more and more evidence in the market. They are not happy with just questionnaires asking patients if they felt better, yes, maybe, or no. They really want to see real-world evidence, real-world data. We're speaking about patient-reported outcome measures. The whole market is moving more towards a value-based healthcare system, so you must offer a more effective solution. And we understand us as the ones who are really supporting other solutions out there. This can be health, can be fitness, can be wellness applications. Through the heart rate variability biomarker, we can detect the body load, meaning is your body at the moment in balance? How much can your body recover from load? This is a biomarker everybody needs, because then you are able to actually track your therapy and therefore show the success you have with the application for the patient. And that's what we are doing now.
Indeed, quite a change from measuring the pressure through the camera lenses of the smartphone. You mentioned data and the importance of this middle layer in the three-layer application description that you shared just now. I assume that to provide effective solution, you need definitely a huge amount of biomarkers collected.
I mean, you're right, but the problem is we are adding our biomarker to other vital data that is out there. So at the end of the day, the other applications must use our data in the way they need to use it. And then, of course, you track over time and then see the progress there. But it's very hard to answer the question from this perspective.
Thank you for your input. Moving slightly away from health sector topics, in your pivot from B2B2C to now B2B, a big change happened in the sales cycle. How big of a change was it? What really changed for Kenku's sales organization? And how are you approaching your customers currently?
Yeah, the sales cycle shortened massively. So at the moment, I would say sales cycle about 6 to 8 weeks, mostly leveraging my network, its friends network, its customers network. LinkedIn definitely plays a big role in this game at the moment. We know that many people are in their home offices, so it's very hard to approach them also if you want to call them, whereas I'm convinced that also cold calls are not state of the art anymore. It's also mailings, but at the end of the day, you're kind of building like the next step from the previous step, right? So you're having certain corporations running, then you're approaching larger corporates or let's say startups. And then this is how you kind of grow. You have some lucky shots, but also it's like still hard work to convince other startups, especially now their head of products or their chief medical office, which is mostly at the moment the type of people I'm speaking to, because they're all, of course, super, super busy and they have full product roadmaps. So that's at the moment the bottleneck I have to fight against. But the very interesting and for me very positive thing is that there's hardly any conversation where the outcome is, no, we don't need this. Because everybody understands in order to survive, you must work with relevant vital data to make your products better. So it's often more the question, how can we integrate and when can we make this happen? And that's good. And it's so much more fun at the moment and being in these shorter sales cycles than before.
Looks like high pace, a lot of learning, the perfect place to be also based on your drives. So big corporates, startups, everything in between. Do you have also a geographical focus?
Well, I think we're still in the phase of the trial and error. And of course, our network is much, much stronger in the European market. However, we have the first leads also in the US market now and also in Scandinavia. And I think this will grow. Then there is people who know other people who might open you their network. Or you get some other lucky punches, maybe with some two or three key players in some markets. You get a good article out there and then you just gain much more attention and therefore also some pull effect. Planning online sales, online marketing these days in a B2B space, especially with a rather new product, is still some sort of trial and error. But I can say it's highly exciting and running very successful at the moment. Coming back to your question, it's trying to grow out of a very solid European base and then also going overseas.
Being more active and focused on Europe could be also more convenient from the regulatory affairs perspective, because then you have a product which is certified according to the European regulations and you could potentially sell it to companies in different European Union countries. Or is that a naive thought?
No, I think that's right. Also must understand that the European regulation is rather strict, definitely stricter than the North American regulation. But outside Europe, every market has different rules, of course. And in some markets, also depending a bit on how you use the SDK, how you use the vital data, you might not even need a certification. So it really is dependent on also on the course of your product. If your product is more a cardio app, then the probability to have medical device certification is of course much, much higher compared to one more in the fitness and wellness space. So this is also one very important factor. What do you do with the data? And what is the overall cause of your application for the end consumer?
Which in the case of Kenku may vary quite a lot depending on the client.
Correct, yes.
Matthias, thank you very much for all the perspective on building a medical product and on the challenges and at the same time the rewards when a startup pivots. Satisfied with today's guest, Federico?
Absolutely. It was exactly the way we like it here.
Concise, swift, and on target.
Yeah, you know what else is on target? Subscribing to this pod.
Couldn't agree more. Folks, did you like it? Then hit the subscribe button and share it with your friends.
Did you dislike it? Then hit the subscribe button and share it with that colleague you hate.
Either way, follow us, because next time we are going to have...